Sounds True presents Natural Perfection, teachings, meditations, and chants from the Dzogchen tradition of Tibet. Tape 3 with Lama Saridas.
Now I'm going to talk about the Dzogchen practice of self-inquiry, because self-knowledge is the essence of awakening and enlightenment. As the ancient classic, the Tao Te Ching, says, knowing others is intelligence. Knowing yourself is true wisdom. Mastering others is strength. Mastering oneself is true power. If you realize that you have enough, you are truly rich. When you stay in the center and embrace everything with wholeheartedness, you will live forever. So what is this self? Who are we, really? Have you ever asked yourself? I know I've asked myself. Who am I? What is this? What's happening? What am I doing and why? What do I really want? What's driving my desires and aversions, my likes and dislikes? Why am I so rarely satisfied fully? And even if satisfied, for how long before that gnawing dissatisfaction creeps back in again? Who am I? Who is experiencing one's own experience? Have you ever wondered that? I'm sure you have. As we grow up, we all grow through some kind of identity crisis, long or short, perhaps in our teens or our 20s, perhaps over a few decades. Perhaps that wave comes in again in our 40s or 50s, when we realize, this is what I'm going to be when I grow up. Oh my God, is this all? And we start to again reassess our place in the universe, our relationship to ourselves, to the world, and to that which is beyond us. This is the question of identity. That's why the sages since antiquity have advised and exhorted us, as did Socrates, to know yourself. For these answers are within, and we can know it by the practice, the experience of looking into ourselves, called self-inquiry, a practice common to many spiritual traditions, and in the Dzogchen tradition, it forms the foundational practice for the practice of Dzogchen meditation itself that I've been teaching. If you look into who is experiencing your experience in this present moment, what would you find? Are you who you think you are? What I found after many years living in the East and pursuing these matters through theory and practice, meditation, yoga, and prayer, through self-inquiry, through psychoanalysis and therapy, and philosophical studies too in college and since then in my own reading, is that I am not who I think I am. It doesn't sound like much, admittedly, but it was an earth-shattering realization. Because every moment I was living as if I was something that I'm not. So again, I wonder, who am I really? This Dzogchen practice of self-inquiry, called Rūshen, discernment, or insightful discrimination, helps us to discern the difference between our true and false selves, our true nature, who we really are, our self with the capital S, our transpersonal self on the one hand, and on the other hand, our small egoic false self, our persona and personality, socially conditioned, yet very, very fleeting. When we talk about unmasking ourselves and finding our true self, our true original nature, it sort of reminds me of our American Halloween custom, where we put on costumes, or when we go to masked balls, costume parties, and we have a good time, temporarily or at different times not being recognized as ourselves. Don't we feel a certain freedom in that? Certain fun that we can have with others where we're not stuck in our usual roles? Just think about this for a moment. If you came home at holidays, or you came home today to your mate, and you didn't have to fall into the same roles exactly. You sat in different chairs at the kitchen table at dinner. You didn't always answer in the same way, so predictable. The child says they want to do something. The parent reacts as lovingly as they can. The child says, "Dad, you always say that. I knew you were going to say that." Aren't we all caught up in this sort of endless dance that's more like a rut than freestyle? Think about Halloween or a masked ball. Our life is like that. We've put on these personas. We've donned these masks of ego. We found a strategy as we were growing up through which we can cope with life. And then we've forgotten that it's just a role, a costume, a mask that we have put on. And we think that that's what we are. That's why this practice of subtle discernment, Rushen, or self-inquiry, can help us remember who we are beneath all the masks, the Halloween costumes, the family and professional and roles of this fleeting lifetime, and bring us back to who we truly are before Adam and Eve fell from the garden, before we lost touch with our inner child and the awe and wonder of growing up. We can come back to that place where we wake up every morning not remembering what we're supposed to do and when, and every day is a new day until we plug in to the details. Don't worry, the agenda book will always be there. The question is, can we ever not be enmeshed in it? A glimpse of freedom will go a long way. As the Indian poet Saint Kabir sang, "I glimpsed it for 15 seconds. It made me a servant for life." When we look inside, when we turn the spotlight, the searchlight inward, what do we find? If we ask, "Who am I?" what is the answer? Is the answer me? Is that enough to satisfy oneself? Where is this ego or self? Who do we think we are? Are we just a man or a woman? Are we just the role that we assume in society? Parent, or child, or student, or accountant, lawyer, teacher, truck driver, household engineer, computer programmer, rocket scientist? Is that what we are? Is that all that we are? Anything we say about ourselves and think about ourselves is just a momentary label. But who is it that's labeling ourselves? Who are we really? Who is it that's hearing these words? Who is it that's thinking our own thoughts? Who is it that likes a certain kind of music and doesn't like some other kind? These are just personal preferences. But who are we really? And how long do those preferences last? Didn't we like different music some decades ago? We might trace back and say, are we the same as we were 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago? Maybe we don't even have the same name. Maybe we have the same name, but we don't really have the same body. Do we have the same body as we did when we were 5, 10, 15, or 20 years old? Just ask yourself, what's happening here? Science tells us that every cell in the body regenerates itself and changes over 7 or 8 years. And as for the mind, if we look into that, notice how fickle and changeable that is. Our thoughts and feelings and sensations and preferences, emotions, plans and ambitions change so constantly, if not every minute or every day, at least every few years. How many times have you reinvented yourself in this single lifetime? How many careers, how many roles, how many relationships, or for that matter, marriages have you been in and out of? And yet, What is the unchanging underlying continuity of it all? That's the question we're looking into. This self-inquiry practice, if you use it, even right now, reflecting on these things, can help you go deeper into contemplative experience and touch it intuitively. Touch or directly access this underlying continuity, what we call Buddha nature, one's true original nature. The eye cannot see itself, as many say, but with a mirror, we can. Spiritual practices are that mirror, so we can see ourselves as if from outside and get a bigger, clearer picture of ourselves. We can see the forest, not just be lost down here in the trees that we're walking among of our daily existence. Are we just our body, which changes so much? Are we just our work or our role in society? Let's think about that for a moment. Maybe you're a husband or a wife or a parent or a child or an employee or a boss or a general or a foot soldier right now. But were you that 10 or 20 years ago? And will you be that 10 or 20 or 40 years from now? It is a universal truth as well as a Buddhist fact of life that everything is impermanent and changing. Notice that. It can free us from investing in the false gold of that which does not remain. And we can find something timeless that is beyond deterioration and change. Again, the underlying continuity. Please don't jump to the conclusion that I'm telling anybody anything. I'm the question man here. The answers lie within your own experience. We can find direct access to this underlying continuity or our true nature, our unborn and undying primordial nature, our true being with a capital B, through our own discriminating wisdom, through our own deepening experience and realization. And yet, it's not something we can easily put a finger on or a name to. It's ineffable who we truly are. That's the wonder of it, the mystery. I think it was Albert Einstein who said once, I'm quoting from memory, the most beautiful thing in the world is the mysterious. This points to the infinite depth and profundity of these existential matters, these existential questions, such as, who are we really? And yet we can discover more and more these universal principles or secrets of the universe, as did Albert Einstein, a very spiritual man, in fact, who said that he thought that if there was any religion that could suit our needs in the future, that is congruent with the way of thinking of science and postmodern thought, it is Buddhism. This subtle discernment practice of self-inquiry helps us use the analytical or intellectual faculties that we've developed so much in our life here in the modern world to exhaust the mind, to use the mind to go beyond the mind. It's sort of like a vaccination or inoculation where we use a little bit of the disease virus itself, like smallpox virus, to vaccinate us against getting the disease. We use the mind to exhaust the mind, as in the Zen tradition, Zen Buddhist tradition, where we use koans, a kind of existential riddle or conundrum. Who am I is a sort of koan. We use a koan like that to exhaust the mind so that we can feel something or experience something when the mind just stops and drops. Zen koans or conundrums, such as, we all know the sound of two hands clapping, but what is the sound of one hand clapping? You can think about that for a while, but only so much. And then try to keep penetrating it to stimulate the other side of your brain, the gestalt, holistic intuition, into action. Another Zen koan is, what did your face look like before your parents were born? Think about that as far as you can, and then keep seeking. Then we start to experience the formless truth beyond the forms, the faces, and the concepts. We transcend our minds and reach something much deeper. On one hand, life, just like our true nature, you, is an ineffable, profound and unfathomable mystery. On the other hand, we can't know it with our limited intellectual minds, but we can be it through living from the heart, at one and at ease every day in our own life. This is the magic or the paradoxical balance that we can strike through practice, through plumbing these mysteries, through working on ourselves, through doing the real work of spiritual growth, transformation, and realization, through learning, through reflecting, and through realizing and experiencing for ourselves these deep truths that are self-evident, yet they are just rumors from the past unless we confirm it for ourselves. The mind, the intellect, rational thinking is not the proper tool to fathom all the mysteries of the spiritual universe. As the eye can't see itself, as the sword can't cut itself, we can't get that close to ourselves. That's the bad news. That's also the good news, because the reason we can't is because we're not apart to begin with. We can talk about union with God. We can talk about realizing or achieving oneness. The fact is, it's reunion with the Godhead, with the ultimate, with that transcendent spirit or cosmic mind that is immanent, inherent in each of us. It's not far from us, even if we may feel far from it. Don't overlook it. So when we look into ourselves, what do we find? Again, are we just our body? Are we our mind? Who are we when we're asleep and dreaming? Think about that. And how quickly things can change in dreams. We can be flying. We can assume different shapes. We can even awaken within our dreams and know we're still asleep and dreaming and yet be awake. In Tibetan Buddhism, we have a practice called dream yoga or lucid dreaming in Western psychological terms. Catching ourselves dreaming. Grasping the fact that we're dreaming, seizing the dream, awakening in the dream, and being the master of the phenomena rather than simply victimized by it. Not being fooled by the dreamlike occurrences, but knowing we can change it at will. But who is it that's dreaming? Where are these dreams coming from and taking place? Except in our own minds. Who is the adversary? Who is the victim here? When it's all in your own mind, like last night's dream. You may have dreamed of people or places or things that happened that you liked, had a nice dream, beautiful dream, or that you didn't like, or even had a nightmare. But all of these dream figures, as we know from depth psychology, are only figments of your own imagination. They're representations of your own projection. Who is projecting these experiences? Who is afraid? Who is resentful? Where is it right now? If we look deeply into the source of our experience, not just looking at sights and sounds, not just tasting things and smelling them, but turning towards the source of the experience, inside behind those sensory gateways, to the visual consciousness, the olfactory consciousness, and so on, the tactile consciousness. Can we find anyone there? Is it like there's a little me or a little monkey at each of those six sense windows looking out? Or is there just one big gorilla inside, or a little monkey? And is there anything in there, or is it all process? Check it out in the present moment and see for yourself, feel it, experience it, sense it directly if you can. Who is experiencing these experiences? The wise Buddha said, in seeing there is just seeing, nothing separate outside to see, and no one inside to see it. In hearing there is just hearing, nothing separate outside to hear and no one inside hearing it. Can you touch that place? Beyond self and other, no one inside separate to hear it, no monkey, no nut at the center of the onion when we've peeled away layer by layer, deconstructing the mansion, the shack that ego built. Ourselves, our life, our self-image. Can we loosen the mask, the persona that we've donned, that we've assumed for so long that we've forgotten it all? This is the purpose of self-inquiry. Perhaps it gets hairy sometimes. We get confused or frightened. Let's not get confused about confusion. Just cut through it with this laser-like, scalpel-like question, who or what is confused? And let it be. Find the still eye in the center of the storm. Let confusion just be confusion. No problem. Recognizing confusion is wisdom, is clear vision, is seeing or enlightenment. Just like if your body is sick, to say that it's not sick is delusion. To recognize illness is wisdom, is clarity. After a one-month retreat that I lead every summer in upstate New York for our Dzogchen Foundation Sangha, my main student at the time and my assistant teacher now, Professor John McCransky, called home. He had not been home for a month, home to Cambridge, Massachusetts. And he talked to one of his little boys, five-year-old Jonathan. First he talked to his wife, Barbara, and then Jonathan got on the phone. And my assistant teacher, John, said, "Jonathan, it's me, Daddy." After a month, I think it's great that Daddy still remembered who he is, at least in relation to his son. After a month of meditating on self-inquiry and this kind of Dzogchen practice, Jonathan said, "Daddy who?" His father was shocked, but he was in a good state. He was resilient. He took it in stride. He said, "You know, it's me, Daddy. I went away a month ago." And Jonathan cut him off. He said, "I'm just kidding, Daddy." Even from the mouths of babes, they can still get you. So again, coming back to the projector of the entire movie of our life, rather than being lost in the movie screen, the mere projections of our experience. Turn back from the screen, the big screen, the silver screen, to the projector. Follow the light stream back to where it's all coming from and plumb that bottomless, eternal source. Tracing this source as if we're tracing back the source of the holy river Ganges brings us back home to our beginning point, the alpha and omega of our existence, the beginning and the end, the great circle in all its completeness, our true home, beyond isms, beliefs, and schisms. Experiencing that is satisfying beyond belief. Satisfying, delicious, indescribable, yet so very vivid. It's like ultimate experience of love with your loved one. Who can describe it? Yet we all know it is there, and it comes in its own time. These practices help us experience them. Dzogchen provides direct access to these profound mysteries that are right within our grasp, like Buddha in the palm of our hand. These epiphanies, these breakthroughs, they seem like accidents when they occur. But let me tell you the secret of spiritual masters all over the world. Spiritual practice makes us more accident prone. We can't help precipitate these marvelous breakthroughs. That's the purpose of Dzogchen practice, to provide us direct access to the ultimate. The word Dzogchen, or the innate great perfection, the natural great completeness, the radiant heart of spirit, actually describes this state. It's not an oriental philosophy. It's a mirror. So that our I with the capital I, not our little ego, our eye can see itself, a mirror in which we can see ourselves clearly without intermediary or distortion. This experience is something we can develop, we can access, we can precipitate through Dzogchen practice, through self-inquiry, through cutting through Dzogchen meditation, Tregchud, cutting through, seeing through duality. And yet, it's something that's always a part of us. So we have to discover it. That is an experience that we need to have. This primordial great perfection, this radiant, blissful nature of things just as they are, is not something that we need to fabricate or put together. Yet, we need to experience it to know that it's there, to feel it, to integrate it into our daily lives. Just dipping a cucumber into vinegar is not enough to make it into a pickle. But soaking it in the juice, the vinegar of spirit over months and years, unalterably changes that cucumber forever. Similarly, when we immerse ourselves in spiritual practice, we will never be the same. We may feel far from it, but it's never far from us. It's right here, as I've said many times. The problem is we're usually elsewhere. So it's a matter of discovery and developing and integrating it, not creating it anew. For as Ecclesiastes says, there is nothing new under the sun. There is a time for everything under heaven. And still, that timelessness remains forever. We need to understand, according to this Dzogchen teaching, that we are not bridge builders. We're not trying to construct a huge skyscraper over many years and lifetimes of construction business, of carrying heavy loads up higher and higher into thinner and thinner, more dangerous, difficult air. We're talking about landing, coming home, reaching the ground, from which no rug can be pulled out from under us. Any towel you build will topple. The great pyramids will turn to sand. Even the oceans and the mountains, however long they remain, will be gone one day. But we can reach the timeless ground, the groundless ground, that can never be swept away. For it is not a thing. It's a mystery. It's ineffable. It's like the Godhead. It's not the God and gods that all speak of. It's the unnameable. It's the unmentionable. It's the ultimate. This may seem a little abstract, but through self-inquiry, we can go practically into this step by step, examining, scrutinizing meticulously our body, our emotions, our feelings, our mind, our psyche, our dreams, our world, our relations. Look into our assumptions and see who is projecting this world of our own experience, interpretations, and reactions. Who except ourselves? Peeling away layer by layer. I'm not just my states of mind, I'm not just my education level, I'm not just my belief system, I'm not just a good person or a bad person, I'm not just a person. Imaho, incredible, if we can even get that far, then what are we? Peeling away the layers of the onion, smelly, pungent, delicious layers, until we get to that nut at the center. That's the point. That nut that is not a nut at the center of the onion. That's what Buddhists mean when they say emptiness. It's one all the way through. There's nothing at the center. It's all center. Every bit of our life is it. It's all that wonderful, smelly, fruity, vegetable-y, glorious, radiant life. That's the great mandala, the ultimate mandala, the innate natural perfection of things. Everything belongs. Everything is part of it. Our stools, as well as our poetry. Our fights with our mate, as well as our beautiful marriage ceremonies, This is the principle of non-dualism, of wholeness. When we inquire into who and what we are, we start to find out that this is what we are through and through. Of course, we need to look deeper. We live in materialistic, consumer-oriented information age. Yes, let's look deeper. Let's look inside, but let's also look around and look deeper into each other's eyes and not just say, who am I? Ad infinitum, ad nauseam. But who are you? We can find the infinite in the finite also. We can find it in another. Who are you? Try to listen. I want to listen to you. I want to feel who you are. Tell me. Show me. We'll get to know ourselves better that way too. We'll find the place where we all meet. We can find ourselves through loving and service and surrender to another, as well as by going into ourselves in solitude, in contemplation, and so on. Another friend of mine and student, Annie Baer, came to one of our retreats, and she said, you know, Surya, I've been trying to crack this nut, think about this who am I question, it's making me crazy. It made me so crazy because all I could keep answering after I kept asking and asking and saying, not this, not just that, I'm not just a woman, I'm not just a mother, I'm not just an administrator, I'm not just a Buddhist, I'm not just American, I'm not just old or young or who I thought I was. So it's making me crazy. The only answer I kept coming up with after a while, my mind was exhausted, was, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, leave me alone already, I don't know. This is a conversation she was having with herself, she was telling me. So she continued. So I went to my old therapist, and I talked to her, and I told her. And the therapist said, but Annie, how could you not know? You're Annie. Everybody knows. And at that moment, it just clicked for Annie. And she realized, I don't know, was a much truer answer than I'm Annie, the Annie that everyone knows. And Annie reported this to me in an interview with me during our retreat this past winter. And it was so gratifying to hear how through these different ways of practicing, including going to a therapist to get some kind of Western perspective, throwing her back more deeply into her spiritual practice, how therapy, psychotherapy, and meditation practice, Dzogchen, could go together in transcending and going beyond the personal, in dissolving our narcissism and our self-concepts. Annie realized that I don't know is a good answer. In fact, it's more true than any of the partial knowledges we can say in words or concepts about ourselves. I am this or I am that. All so temporary, so contingent, so relational, so relative, so arbitrary. When we chew on these koans, these conundrums, these riddles of existence, they can drive us wild or crazy. And that's kind of the point. Not to make us permanently into people with broken mental health, but to drive us out of our complacent minds, to break the envelope that we feel stuck in. I remember when I was in India a few years ago, visiting some of my teachers, some of my last great living Dzogchen masters in Nepal, now deceased. I went with some friends who were also Buddhist teachers, insight meditation teachers, to visit the master Punjaji, Papaji, in his house in Allahabad. Papaji was an old master in his 80s by then, hard of hearing, but he spoke English, a remarkable thing for a master in India of that generation. Spoke it well. He had been a mining engineer for many years and a family man while he practiced his spiritual practices of self-inquiry every morning for many, many years throughout this century. And I remember somebody came with a microphone. They stuck a microphone in front of Papaji and a video camera, and they said, Papaji, we have so many friends at home in America, in Europe, who could benefit from your wisdom, who would love to come and see you, who are seeking truth and enlightenment. they could benefit from so much from your teachings of self-inquiry, your teachings of enlightenment now, of the already ever perfect. What should they do? Do you have any advice for them? Give us some advice. And Papaji, who's an old Indian man, hard of hearing, gruff, so loving at heart, but an old grandfather, he said, stay wherever you are. That's the advice for you right now. Come home and be wherever you are. Make yourself at home right there. You don't have to go to India to look for the late Papaji's house. Another day, Papaji used to ask us to tell our experiences. He would say, so what did you understand? Tell me your enlightenment experience. You're supposed to be a teacher of spirituality. And we would each have to tell him our experience, even in front of the others. It was kind of embarrassing, but this was a kind of a spiritual charade or shadow play, making us work out our personal attachment to these stories that we sort of had. And I remember when I told him my story, and I told Papaji more than I had ever said aloud to anyone in this way, in public, in front of anybody else, except perhaps to one of my lamas in private. And I realized that my mind was no different than the Buddha mind, no different than my guru, no different than you. It was one with all. And I went on and on for several minutes. And it was a stretch. It was hard to do. It was hard to do in front of other people, even my closest Dharma friends. And after telling all this, my true answer, my heart's answer to who am I, and spilling my gut, spilling my heart, in public as it were, Papaji said, what? And I had to say it all again. It was not, it didn't mean anything. He didn't even hear it. It didn't matter. It was just my story. That's how he drove me even further into the beyondness of the question and the answer, who am I? It didn't matter because this spilling my guts wasn't really for him anyway. This was all for my own spiritual benefit. I remember once in a long 4-year cloistered retreat with my Tibetan Dzogchen teacher in France, doing some visionary practices. Things were starting to happen. And I asked my own beloved mentor, Nyoshul Ken Rinpoche, what does all this mean? What are all these visions? What are all these energy eruptions and kundalini risings? What does it mean, all these dreams, all these empowerments and blessings coming in dreams and predictions and things? And usually, the Buddhist masters, whenever you talk about these things, they'll just say, just keep meditating. Or they'll say, oh, it's all just like a dream. Just keep your eyes peeled. Just watch it. Just be mindful of whatever comes and goes without judging or choosing. But in this case, I said to Rinpoche, what does it all mean, all these visions and experiences? And he said, Surya, you're just getting to know yourself better. I think this is something you can take a lot from when we start to realize that all the marvels that we read of in the spiritual world, in the scriptures, in the mystic poets, this is all within you, within me. We're all just getting to know ourselves better. When we read the mystic poets and their conversations with God, we're tuning in on a party line. This is our own conversation. Anything could happen. Our lives could turn on a dime. In fact, they have. Everything could disappear in an instant. So let's not procrastinate or fool ourselves and look into the meaning of things, the big questions, the question of identity, who am I, questions of birth and death. Who dies? Who is born? Because as the Buddha said, forms are like mere balls of foam. Feelings are like bubbles. Perceptions are just like mirages. Willful volition and impulses are just like spreading trees, grasses, and weeds. Consciousness and its many variations is like a magical illusion. If we meditate on this according to the Diamond Sutra, the wisdom scripture of Buddhism, where Buddha said, think of this fleeting world in this way. It's like stars vanishing at dawn, like bubbles on a fast-moving stream, like a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, like dewdrops on blades of grass evaporating in the morning, like a flickering lamp in the wind, like phantoms, like mirage, like a dream. If we think about these similes of illusion from the Diamond Scripture, we can start to observe in our own experience how the seasons come and go, the beautiful spring, lush spring flowers turn into the verdant fields of summer, and then the colorful fields of brocade autumn, and then the stark black and white death in winter, and yet leading right again into the lush growth of spring. What a miracle. And we start to see the greater cycling that has to eventually include us too, if we think deeply about it. The animate and the inanimate world being inextricably bound. Where does that leave you and I? Aren't we part of it too? Aren't the animals and the fish and the birds of the air and the insects and the seen and unseen beings part of that too? So it's all cycling like bubbles on a stream, part of the water, yet momentarily discrete. We are like bubbles on the stream of being, rushing on forever. If we meditate, if we contemplate these things, if we reflect on them analytically, these are all forms of meditation that can help us inquire more deeply into what we're like. Who are we really? Who is experiencing our experience right now? Now we're going to practice this subtle discernment, Rushen, separating the wheat from the chaff, seeing if we can find our true nature amidst and beneath it all. Meditate like this. Ask yourself, suddenly, abruptly, turn your mind back upon itself. Rather than looking out at objects of perception, turn towards the projector. Look into yourself. Turn the mind upon the mind with this laser-like question. Who or what is experiencing my own experience right now? Who or what is hearing these words? Who or what is breathing my breath? A. Houseman wrote a poem. It says, I lay me down in slumber, and every morn revive. Whose is the night-long breathing that keeps a man alive? When I was off to dreamland and left my limbs forgot, who stayed at home to mind them and breathed when I knew not? So who is breathing our breath, this automatic response? And what makes it stop at a certain point? Who dies? Is it a matter of choice or inevitability or what? Who was born? Some say we have many lives, but without going into that, let's inquire right now into the present, seeing we can find the timeless time or moment of Dzogchen, the eternal now, beyond past, present, and future, beyond birth and rebirth. Who are we right now? Who is being born and reborn every instant? With the out-breath like a little death, with the in-breath like a little rebirth. Who is breathing? Who is thinking about this? Who am I? Ask oneself, who is experiencing my experience right now? Who is perceiving? Who is hearing these words? Who is wondering what the hell this is all about? Where is it? What is it? This perceiver, this knower, this formless, intangible, yet so very vivid sovereign of our experience, this chief executive officer of our company, our true company, whose company we always keep. Who is it running the show here? Who is it running your show right now? Look into that. Look behind the stage. Is it in your head? the perceiver, the knower, the spirit that animates you. Right now, see if you can sense it directly. Feel it. Intuit. Not just thinking about it. Is it in your body? We Westerners, we point to our heads when we say, I, or my brain. We think our consciousness is there. In the East, in Buddhism, in Tibet, we point to our chest. The heart, mind, the consciousness is sort of in our chest and filling the entire energy being all around us and our entire being, not just in our head or our body. Ask yourself, where is it? Is it in your heart? Or is it all around you, like a luminous sphere? Mind is the knower. Consciousness animates the various sense doors, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, the body. It's consciousness that feels, that hears, that sees, that smells, that tastes and touches, that perceives all that transpires through the gates of the six senses. But what is the nature of this mind, this consciousness? Is it one consciousness or many? Is it the same consciousness that you hear with and that you see with? Know the knower, see through the seer, and be free. What is this mind, nature of mind, this ever-changing quicksilver, formless yet so powerful, conscious mind, including the unconscious and the subconscious? Look into that. Does it have a color? Is it square or round? Is it in your whole body? What happens if you lose a limb or a body part? Does it get smaller? Does it lose IQ points or emotional intelligence points? I don't think so. Is it always the same? Or simply an ongoing, underlying, continuous stream of consciousness, unconsciousness, subconsciousness? A congeries of various whirling forces and mind moments, our habits and patterns, called in Buddhist language mental events, ungoverned, not your own. So many voices whispering over your shoulder from the past. Just like the ever-changing weather, so conditioned, so dependent on circumstances. Can we really say my body? Can you really say your body or my body? Can you really say, my dear friends, your mind or mine, your world or mine? Do you decide what goes on in this company? Who is running your show? Who decides when you get sick? Who decides when you die or are born? Does the world disappear when you disappear? I don't think so. So what goes on? What remains? What is continuous and what is fleeting? This is what we can start to discern as we look deeper into ourselves. Let's go deeper. Look into where are your present thoughts or feelings arising from. Turn the spotlight inward. Scrutinize meticulously. See if you can sense it when you feel something in your body, or you sense or you know something in your mind, or you hear something. Where is it arising, that perception, that experience? And where is it right now? Is it in the brain or the heart or the consciousness? Where is the thoughts and the feelings and the perceptions of these mental events coming from? And where are they right now when you experience it? And where do they go when they pass on? All these impermanent, fluctuating phenomena and noumena, or mental events, arising and dissolving on their own like waves in the sea. Yet the sea remains, regardless of what kind of waves momentarily appear in it. Similarly, our true nature, our luminous, non-complex, profound, untrammeled and free, deathless nature remains no matter what weather, emotional weather, psychological weather, temporarily appears in it, just as the infinite sky remains unchanged regardless of the weather. As you go deeper, peeling away layer by layer, saying not this, not that, neti, neti, as they say in India, not just the body, not just the role, not just the personality, not just my preferences and likes and dislikes, not just your particular hang-ups or special talents and abilities. Who are you really right now? Know the knower. Perceive the perceiver directly. See through the seer. And imaho, be free. Plumb this bottomless abyss, this luminous, senseless openness, this radiant, infinite imminence of the transcendent right in us right now. Plumb this luminous openness and rest in that. Trace this source all the way home to your own home, your own hearth. Om. So that's the self-inquiry meditation, guided meditation from the Rushen teachings of Dzogchen, helping us to look beyond our temporary ego selves, look a little more deeper in a practical way, in an experiential way. I think in a very modern American way, using our mind and our intellect as well as our intuition, accessing the deepest recesses of knowing and glowing and being. Learning to know and accept and love ourselves, discovering our true selves, uncovering and recovering our true selves, who and what we truly are. This process of unmasking ourselves, I think, is extremely important for us today. We're bombarded on all sides by people who would tell us what we should do, what we should like, what we should buy, who we should fear, and so on. How can we live in the way that we're meant to be if we don't realize and achieve some form of inner freedom amidst all of this advertising, spin, and coercion? All the sizzle without much substance. So, after this self-inquiry meditation, after going through this intense and deep process of subtle discernment, of self-observation, of expanding and deepening our self-awareness and consciousness. So who are you anyway? Who do you think you are? From the point of view of Dzogchen, from the ultimate view that we are all Buddhas by nature, we only have to awaken to that. Who the hell do you think you are not? Who do you think you're not? Trungpa Rinpoche said, you are far more Buddha-like than you think. We are all Buddhas, sometimes asleep, sometimes awake. But nothing fundamentally affects our true situation, our true nature. One of the freedom fighters of India, one of the spiritual activists who later became a master and a guru, Aurobindo, one of Mahatma Gandhi's colleagues, was imprisoned in Calcutta along with Gandhiji for resisting British colonialism around World War II in India. Aurobindo sang, they can imprison my body, but they can't imprison my mind. This is the path of freedom, of self-mastery. We can find this freedom wherever we are. Dzogchen provides direct access to our inherent fullness, radiance, and freedom of being, to our deathless, undying nature. This is the joy of inquiry, the joy of meditation, the Alpha and Omega of the spiritual path, in which we come home, in which we trace the source all the way back to where we begin. Not just finding our own, as they call today, inner child, or as I like to say, our little Buddha, but even before that, even before that. Then every moment we can begin anew. We're free from whatever burdens us. There's no such thing as ruts or hang-ups. It's like the ultimate therapy. We have come up to date with ourselves in the present moment. No past burdening us, no future to fear or hope for. Total freedom, total perfection. What a delight, joy, bliss. Finding our own true Dharma and wisdom and love in our own life, in our own experience, through knowing the love and the truth, the authenticity, the tender heart, the pure goodness at the heart of all of us. If you would just know yourself, your true self, I assure you, you'd be surprised. It might be instantly more wonderful than you can ever imagine. Take the leap. It's worth it. Make the leap. Let's leap together. This self-inquiry practice provides a firm foundation for the more non-dual, no-mind practices of sky gazing, of Dzogchen Trekchud, of seeing through duality. Since we live in the world of dualisms, of right and wrong, good and bad, since we are distinguished as human beings from the animals by our self-reflective and mental capacities, we use them. It all becomes part of our practice, a propellant towards deeper realization. This self-inquiry can help us to access the view, the perfection of our true nature, so then we can meditate on it and act from it, not just knowing about it, but actually embodying it in daily life. Without this foundation, we can say we're practicing Dzogchen, sky gazing. We can say everything's perfect, there's nothing to do, but we haven't really experienced that. It would just be a rationalization. We wouldn't have any view or any experience of great dropping or flopping to rest in. We wouldn't have any seat for ourselves to sit on. It's like until we have learned with our body intuitively to ride a bike or a horse, we have not found our seat. Once we've found it, we can find that balance point on any bike or horse. One can't find one's seat from reading books. One has to get put up on the bike. One has to try with training wheels. Finally, one has to take the risk of falling and start riding oneself until you find your own balance. Moreover, even when we found our own balance on a bicycle, have you ever noticed? You're always making little adjustments. That inner gyroscope is always balancing and rebalancing. Similarly, our inner spiritual gyroscope works, keeping us balanced and in tune, no matter what the road conditions provide. It's like once we learn how to swim, we can jump into any water. Big waves, small waves, we know how to swim. We can do different strokes, depending on conditions. So there are different approaches in the Dzogchen practice. First, learning the view, meditation, action, so we can just rest in that great state of allowing, of seeing through, of clear, choiceless awareness. And second, tuning it up with supportive practices to help keep it clear and vivid and authentic, not just daydreaming or rationalizing and saying there's nothing to do and nowhere to go. It's too soon for that. Dzogchen meditation practice is the radiant heart of spirit. It helps us to awaken in the present moment to the alertness, to the vividness, to appreciating and savoring every moment. When you're practicing Dzogchen meditation, the great non-action, the natural awareness and openness meditation of sky gazing, sometimes we might feel distracted. That's the time to take a deep breath, refresh yourself, and start again. Take a deep breath, inhaling and recharging and revivifying the entire system, the body, the breath, the psychic channels and the nadis through which the prana, the energy moves, rebalancing, reharmonizing all the different dimensions of our being. Breathing out and maybe saying, ah, and following it out into infinite openness and emptiness, just resting there for a moment. Who are you then in this moment, before breathing in again and being reborn as yourself? It's almost impossible to think in that moment. That's a good moment to drop body and mind before you breathe in again and simply sense directly the environment of your being. Then breathing in again. And exhaling and releasing and sky gazing. Breaking up the meditation session now and then when necessary to keep it vivid, precise, and clear. The fearless Dzogchen Master Jigme Lingpa sang, as waterfalls become better and more aerated by falling from rock to rock, the Dzogchen meditation improves by being broken up again and again. In other words, keep it fresh. Don't get stuck in any comfort zone or any holding pattern. The airplane should not keep circling over the airport. It has to land and the travelers must be on their way. Similarly, in meditation, it's not just a matter of finding our comfort zone so we can hide out there like a dog in the corner who's been kicked too many times, hiding out like a quietist who just wants to drop out and get away from the world. No, not at all. This kind of awakeness and awareness practice brings us more and more into oneness and intimacy with everything. Breathing in all things and breathing them out again with the kiss of love, with the breath of blessings. Breathing in the entire world with all of its good and evil, with all of what we like and don't like at once. And breathing out with the kiss of acceptance, of blessings, of love. And then letting go, resting in the natural state. The great perfection of things, including ourselves, just as they are. The Buddha said there is nirvanic peace and bliss in things left just as they are. So you can learn to leave them as they are and rest your weary heart and mind. Drop the burden. You don't have to be like Charles Atlas carrying the whole world on your shoulders. As the poet Mary Oliver said, you don't have to walk through the desert for 100 miles on your knees repenting. Just let your soft body love what it loves. When you practice subtle discernment, Rushen, when you practice self-inquiry, when you start to see what you love and what you don't like, and start to prioritize things in your life, it helps you find your true life, your true self. You can gain the whole world. You can learn about and know about the whole world, be full of information and experiences, and still, as the scriptures say, lose your own soul, lose yourself in your true life. This kind of practice will bring it back to you and in abundance. Although this may sound sometimes abstract, rarefied, up in the air, I think it's very practical, here and now teaching. Wisdom can even be corny. like soft corn. My younger students sometimes like to describe it in slang when I teach at my friend's high school in New Jersey, or a few times in prisons like Sing Sing in upstate New York, maximum security prison. Still, we're better to have a sense of humor. And my friends say, all you have to do, Lou, is stay in the great view. Well, keep your head, Fred. Don't get red. Another one said, go with the flow, Joe. Boo-da-bee-bop-bo. This is a Dharma for today. Make up your own maxims and slogans. Put them in bottles and send them afloat on the ocean, or in fortune cookies, or in the form of haiku, or send them as email to whoever needs a little cheering up today that you know. Give them a little gift of silly Dharma from the Mahayana. Lighten up while we enlighten up. This kind of teaching and practice of the great perfection, Dzogchen, introduces how we can be in the world and not totally of it or caught up in it, not to mention drowning in it or being overwhelmed. How we can go with the great occurrence in the river of reality without becoming too caught up in life's little whirlpools and sidetracks. Whether you are practicing formal prayer, meditation, or self-inquiry, yoga, chanting, or simply shampooing your hair or washing the family dog. This is part of the natural play of Buddhiness. Enjoy it. Recognize it as part of your sacred life. When you can relate to and maintain this view, then meditation and action develop spontaneously, manifestly, in all directions at once. And there is no distinction between prayer and formal meditation on one hand and post-meditation or spiritual life throughout the day on the other. In this way, the sacred and the mundane are rejoined, are bridged. My late great master Kala Rinpoche sang in a song of enlightenment, we live in illusion and the appearance of things. In approaching illusory phenomena, we practice illusory practice in an illusory way to gain illusory state of illusory enlightenment. Imaho, everything only appears to be real without actually being so. A fool treats them as if they are solid and real and is therefore burdened and confused. But to recognize that things appear vividly like magic apparitions without being everlastingly real is completely marvelous realization. We live in illusion and the appearance of things. There is a reality. You are that reality. When you understand and recognize this, you are the Buddha. When you understand this, you recognize that you are nothing, and being nothing, you are everything. That's all. Enlightenment is the goal of all of these spiritual practices. Dzogchen promises enlightenment in this very lifetime if we practice it diligently, even in 7 years or 3 years. That's why it's known in Tibetan as the Vajra shortcut, or as the shortest path, the direct path. I mean, how long does it take to wake up after all? How many times do we have to hit the snooze button on the alarm clock and try to stay asleep for 5 more minutes or 5 more years? The truth is that the alarm clock of reality is always ringing. It's up to us to take the pillow off our head. Enlightenment is not what we think it is. And yet it's a very real possibility to awaken to the truth right now. This will free us from all forms of confusion, conflict, and suffering. In the moments of our own greatest or deepest relief, that's close to it. Perhaps you've experienced that through some spiritual epiphany, or through some crisis or illness, or through cosmic orgasm. Just that moment of afterglow before the world comes piling back in, where there's nowhere to go, nothing missing, and nothing extra. There's no question. There's no problem. Nor any solution needed. I remember Trungpa Rinpoche, the great Buddhist pioneer in America. Now gone. To the next life. Saying enlightenment is the biggest disappointment of all, with his sense of sardonic humor, just to deflate our great, bushy-tailed, eager expectations. Because freedom and enlightenment is not what we think it is. One of the greatest Tibetan masters, Tsongkhapa, the Dalai Lama's inspiration, after many years meditating in a cave, 500 or 600 years ago in Tibet, and becoming fully enlightened, receiving directly the blessings of the Wisdom Buddha Manjusri, heart-to-heart, mind-to-mind transmission, in a way that can inspire us to seek and realize the same today, this holy master said, enlightenment turned out to be the opposite of what I expected. This helps, I think, free us from unreal expectations and get down to the nitty-gritty of noticing here and now, where are you stuck? What are you resisting or holding on to? When your mate says, get off it, a Buddhist would say, let go. It's the same. Don't be stuck on that point or opinion. Get off it already. We'll all feel better. You too. The more we hold on to the things, impermanent things of the world that are slipping through our fingers, the more we get rope burned. It's in our higher self-interest to release our tight grip on things that are fleeting and tenuous and ungraspable, including ourselves, our bodies, our minds, our place and role in life, and enjoy it as it comes, as well as it goes. Let's get ourselves a little more together. We're not going to be here forever, whether it's 100 years, 50 years, who's first, who's last. It doesn't matter so much. We don't need to fight for a better berth or better deck chairs on the Titanic. If we remember that, to the extent that you can keep in mind mortality, impermanence, you'll feel different about things, how you spend your days, and be able to better prioritize your life. Think about it, if you only had 5 years to live or 1 year to live, how you'd spend your time. Would you still be spending as many hours at the office? Or would you seek to spend more time with your loved ones, your family, or doing the things that you want to do in this world? I don't think anybody on their deathbed says, damn, I wish I had spent more time at the office. We don't want to die with regrets without having let the music that's in us out. We all have a gift to give to the world. Let's not, like misers, hoard it and leave it buried when we're gone. The Buddha said that the contemplation of death and mortality was the greatest meditation, the most liberating, from holding on to things that are fleeting, from clinging too hard to that which we can never retain. Self-inquiry likewise helps us from clinging too hard to ourselves, to our self-concepts, to our roles. It frees us from the limitations that come along with our hardened self-concepts. Oh, I'm just a woman. I can't do that. Or I'm too old. I can't do that. Or I had a bad childhood. That's why I'm stuck in this rut. That's bullshit. Don't give me that. I won't accept it. We can get there from here, from anywhere. Get where we're looking towards. Subtle discernment, recognizing the difference between our ego mind, our narrow-mindedness, and the infinite Buddha mind or spacious, luminous expanse of our own Rigpa nature, frees us from such limitations here and now, regardless of what happens to our bodies, or even if our mind becomes senile. This realization never changes. This is the ultimate healing. This is the great panacea that frees us and the world from suffering. This is the great ship of deliverance, the great vehicle, the luminous heart of spirit of Dharma, the radiant meditation practice. The Buddha said, when I was enlightened, all were enlightened. The Dzogchen view would be, when I am clear, all is clear. When I am awake, all are awake. In this way, by awakening one, we awaken all. As the scriptures of my own religion of origin say, the Talmud says, save one life and you save the world. This is where it all comes together, in the radiant heart of spiritual awakening, Dzogchen. The outer and the inner life, the benefit of oneself and others, inextricably bound, now and always, whether we're alone or together, truth and love, wisdom and compassion inseparable. Heaven and earth joined in oneself, in you, in I. You, me, we. Imaho, wonderful.
Zowa Dezoi Lama Rinpoche.
This concludes Tape 3 of Natural Perfection with Lama Suryadas. Our program continues with meditations and chants on Tape 4. For more information about Dzogchen, Buddhism for the West, Lama Suryadas and his teaching schedule, and books and other publications, please visit Lama Surya's website at www.surya.org or visit his Dzogchen Foundation website at www.dzogchen.org or write to the Dzogchen Foundation, P.O. Box 734, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 02140.